program coordinator. The second position is a facilities engineer. The third position is an accountant, and the fourth position is administrative. The legislation that Mr. Wilson talked about asked us also to support and set up the grant committee, but these four positions that Senate Bill 1 talks about are really to put into place all of the program elements, working with the committee and trying to determine, based upon the Department of Geology and Mineral Industry seismic report, and then trying to put it into a grant program that is definable and explainable for applicants, both in the school system, fire stations, police stations, hospitals, and the requirements that they would have to achieve to be eligible for the grants. And then, of course, within that is how to prioritize them, what factors do we use to pick and select what applicants actually get funded, and setting up all of the files, the accounting procedures in anticipation of the bonds, and then the facilities engineer continuing to work on the information with the Department of Geology and Mineral Industries to refine the assessments that were made of all the facilities in Oregon. So I'll keep that short, and if you have any questions, I'll be happy to answer them.
Thank you, Mr. Murphy. Any questions? Thank you very much for your testimony. I apologize for not bringing you two both up earlier, Representative Boone and Senator Berger. Would you please like to come forward?
No apology required. And for the record, Deborah Boone, House District 32, and I'll be very brief. I support this. And this is just a little bit more. This is really critical that Oregon step up to the plate and fund OEM in this effort. Dogami's gone to a lot of work to do this. They did a great job. As depressing as the results were, we really need to do this, and I hope that you can support this today.
Representative Senator Berger.
For the record, I'm Joanne Berger, Senate District 5. I think at some point we're going to have to take a really hard look at this office. It is a very small office for what we're asking it to do. But as we expand and find that we have the seismic problems with the schools, we also are woefully unprepared for what's going to create that seismic activity. And so I think that we need to be thinking in that terms. I strongly support Senate Bill 1, and I think that as you look at the cost that it would be for these personnel with this particular issue, that you think in terms of how big, what do we expect of this this agency, what should we expect of this agency, and how should we fund this agency? Because I think those are very, very appropriate questions to ask, but I fully support Senate Bill 1. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much, Senator. Thank you, Representative Penn. No, this is just a public hearing for this. You have to leave 1:30.
And I have to close this.
We need to close this and open up another one.
We
have some
more. Okay. Next up, Vicki McCullough.
Don't have enough stuff in front of you. Don't give me something.
Always looking for something to read. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Good afternoon, co-chair or Chair Shields and committee members. You're not Chair Shields. For the record, I'm Vicki McConnell. I'm the director of the Department of Geology and Mineral Industries, and what I'm have asked to be handed out to you is a summary of the report that we submitted to the Joint Committee on Emergency Preparedness and Ocean Policy on May 22nd, which is the seismic needs assessment of all public schools, K through 12, and community colleges, and all emergency facilities in the state. That's fire stations, emergency stations, and acute care hospitals. And so that's for your information. I'm not going to go through all of that. I'll cut to the chase on it. After we were tasked with going forward and looking at the scope of the issue of the seismic vulnerability of these really critical facilities in the state. And after completing our assessment and compiling this report into the database, and you have it all there on the CD, we strongly recommend that the next step be taken and the Seismic Needs Assessment Grant Committee be formed so that this program, which is really a program, it's not just the state going forward and paying for these buildings to be rehabilitated. It's for a partnership with communities, responsible entities, for we're really looking at how can the communities and the entities help themselves, the state help the communities help themselves, to address the issue of seismic vulnerability to these facilities. And so I strongly support going forward with this program, and that is certainly the recommendation that we found with our report. And with that, I'm happy to answer any questions that you may have about the report or the program.
Representative Nicholson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have just received this. This is my first time to start working in this area, which is what kind of grant funding is available for this kind of rehabilitation, reconstruction, upgrade, and so forth. So could you please help me understand what kinds of federal funds are ever made available through certain through the many different federal agencies? And I don't mean for large-scale programs or grants to states, but are there certain kinds of federal funds that often go to discrete types of activities? Yes. And would those funds be reviewed by this group?
Not sure who to call the chair and Representative Nathanson and committee members. That's an excellent question. And what we have done working with the Office of Emergency Management is we have developed several demonstration projects, rehabilitation projects, working with both the Office of Emergency Management and the Oregon University System, because they also have a whole series of buildings that would be housing students, et cetera, to apply for pre-disaster mitigation grants through FEMA. And that's exactly what it is. It's a grant that, instead of dealing with after the disaster, is actually looking at how can you mitigate or be pre-disaster. We have been quite successful in bringing in funds to rehabilitate several buildings on all of the major OUS campuses. But we really looked at those as demonstration projects as to whether this, and they have rolled that into their deferred maintenance. So when they went in to rehabilitate, seismically rehabilitate a building, they also fixed everything else. So we just had one small part of what the overall cost for the building would be. But it was quite helpful, and it was, I think, a total of almost $6 million. Spread out through all of the universities, the different campuses. Those funds could possibly be available for some of the organizations or entities to apply for maybe planning part, maybe apply for part of that to if there was going, you know, whatever the match is going to be for the state ones. It would not be a program that would cover all the costs for everything, but it certainly is a venue.
Thank you. Further questions?
Mr. Chair, from
yes, Representative Cameron.
Did you say, I'm sorry, did you say the approximate cost to upgrade all the university buildings for this was $6 million?
Representative Cameron, no, sir. That was the grants that we applied for and received grant money for, which was strictly for certain buildings and just for seismic rehabilitation. So, no, the overall cost was considerably more than that.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much
Thank
for your
you.
Testimony. Before we get started, I'm curious, before we get to the next witness, is there anyone here to testify on House Bill 3516A?
Okay. Why don't we quickly do that and get Kurt in here?
All right. I'm going to, for now, before Mr. Balak comes and testifies, I'm going to close the...
I just lost you.
I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 1 and open a public hearing on House Bill 3516A. And Mr. Wilson, you want to give us a brief description?
Sure, real briefly, it is a brief bill. This bill, House Bill 3516-A, requires the Department of Human Services and Department of Administrative Services to collect data, much of which is already collected and put together, and then prepare a report on citizen legal residence requirements for public assistance programs. This report then would be submitted and reported to the 2008 scheduled special session of the legislature. So that, and it did pass out of the Committee on Human Services and Women's Wellness unanimously, 7-0. So that is about it. I don't think there's anyone here to testify. Someone is here from Department of Human Services, was here.
Patty.
There
Patty.
She is, I'm sorry. And if need be, to answer any questions.
I think what my preference would be here, since this already passed out of the Policy Committee unanimously, if... to try to get a sense before we go to work session. Is that Representative Cameron, have you given this any thought?
3516?
Yeah. Bring the co-chair.
Yeah, I guess. I'm not sure. What did it come down here? Is there a fiscal?
No.
I don't know why it came down here.
No. There is no fiscal. Mm-hmm. There shouldn't be.
Perhaps it just had a subsequent referral.
Mr. Chair, I see no problem with the request. It's something that both DHS and Patty can correct me if I'm wrong, that they already collect this kind of information, and it would be a matter of them working with the Department of Administrative Services, which already has a nexus. So
you're okay.
It's
well, I think what we'll do is go into recess until we're...
Oh, going to work session.
There he is. Kevin, I guess what I'm getting at is, are you a yes, or I can have that one of the co-chairs judge for being late? All right, I'll come out of that recess and close the public hearing on House Bill 3516A and open a work session on House Bill 3516A. Could I get a motion to move this to the full Ways and Means Committee?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Wesley.
I move House Bill 3516A to the full committee with a do-pass recommendation.
Senator Westland has moved House Bill 3516A to the full Ways and Means Committee with a do-pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objections? Why don't we be sure that the record indicates that Representative Cameron's present, Representative Nathanson, myself, Senator Westland, Senator Winters, and Senator, what's your name? Schrader.
Say those who work hard are here.
Okay.
That's right.
And there are no objections. Thank you, Senator.
Yes, sir.
On the House side.
You want to do another one?
That's all we're going to work session today, so okay. You're clear. Representative Nathanson, would you carry it on the House side?
Okay.
Or, at least in full. And Senator Wessel, would you carry this on the Senate side?
Absolutely.
Thank you very much. Let's. I did close that work session, right?
Yep.
Let's reopen the public hearing on Senate Bill 1. And Mr. Baila, would you like to come testify? Welcome to the committee.
Chair Shields and what's left of the committee. I'm here today to testify against Senate Bill 1. I want to say I've followed this issue since the 2001 legislature, and I've given you some background material on there. Not discussed yet, but this ties in to House Bill 2370A, which was before Ways and Means yesterday. And on Section 28 of that bill, it amends ORS 401.3 to add effectively doubling the members of the grant committee. It's adding the Department of Education, the Oregon Fire Chiefs Association, the Oregon Association Chiefs of Police, and the Oregon Association of Hospitals and Health Systems. I'm opposed to this for a number of reasons, but I think this grant committee addition 2378 further politicizes a fatally flawed so-called seismic needs assessment conducted by the Oregon Department of Geology and Mineral Industries. And again, the difficulties with 2378 is when we're outside of the Capitol, we have all these nice words about government. But when we come inside 2378, we're putting everything in the hands of the Adjutant General, and people are serving at the pleasure of the Adjutant General, and then the Director of Emergency Management, everybody is serving at his pleasure, including the Grant Committee. But back to Senate Bill 1, it is a flawed system, and the only rational and humane thing to do at this point, I believe, is to simply loan out the money, not go through the charade of picking and choosing who should receive the funds. It's not stated in statute that matching funds are required. The word is may. And the original legislation, which people are not acknowledging, was Senate Bills 14 and 15, the 2001 legislation, which spelled out how the grant money was to be used and how it could be used. And in the update between 2001 and 2005, I think, stuff was left out of the law. So there's conflicting laws on the books. And it's such a mess that my fear is that people will be killed because of the incompetence of this grant committee, which has no expertise in this, and it's not a rational way to do it. And I don't think another objection is obligating the $600,000. That's equivalent to the amount of money that was put in the needs assessment. For that amount of money, you could actually do 70 to 140 maybe. An actual engineering. I gave you a handout on fact sheet on FEMA 154 because there was a special program on this on the AECE Structures Congress that was held in Long Beach last month. It's going to take $10,000 to $20,000. And 4 to 6 weeks of engineering evaluation to actually evaluate the seismic vulnerability of a school. These rapid visual screenings have always been inconclusive. People in the profession will tell you, two engineers I know did IBM's building, and they described it as they made wild guesses, but they both had more than 20 years' experience. So I think also it's premature to give OEM money because this grant committee was in the statute since 2005. They've never convened a committee. The committee is supposed to adopt rules, and it's premature to presuppose the rules when there's been no rulemaking process. And it seems to have been assumed in Mr. Murphy's testimony or Ms. McConnell's testimony that grants are required. I think my recommendation would not to, and the biggest I want to go back to FEMA 154. It's a pass-fail system. It's not a ranking, which was as it was presented at the Joint Committee on Emergency Preparedness Ocean Policy, but Representative Boone did not allow any public testimony at that hearing. So the public is always disenfranchised when it comes to some of these issues. So we have an inconclusive screening that Delgamy is representing as a ranking, and they talk to the committee about probabilities of collapse, but they don't know where these thinking came from the committees that adopted these procedures. And so I would say if any money is given, it should be specifically earmarked for engineering studies, and it doesn't take a rocket scientist to maybe divide that up between unreinforced masonry buildings, non-ductile concrete buildings, buildings like Malala High School that have falling hazards over their gable entries, and actually get some hard numbers before people go into the grant business. There was actually concepts that were presented, and I gave you, only had two copies, but maybe both co-chairs, a letter written to Mr. Balducci in 2001 suggesting a demonstration project that would track costs for a number of years before a formal program was put into place. So I think this system is can't be salvaged. The only thing that you can do would be helpful is to just loan the money. The original, when people voted for these bonds, they thought they were going to fix their schools, hospitals, and emergency facilities. None of the government, the Oregon Seismic Safety Policy Commission, nobody spoke about how the mechanism for evaluating these buildings was to work. And it was to work, and it's still on the books, but it's in conflict, was that the grant money was supposed to be available for further engineering studies. And this grant thing was never made known to the public when they voted in support of the bonds. But I think if you would make this money available and require that it go to engineering evaluations and not to create another bureaucracy. We've already spending over $1 million on an inconclusive study, and we're going to take that inconclusive study and then we're going to make grants on it, which we're going to spend as much to give the grants as we did to make the inconclusive study.
Mr. Miller, I appreciate your testimony. You've had 10 minutes. If you'd like to summarize, we're going to have to move on to another bill.
Well, the permanent members of such a grant committee, let alone the director of the Office of Homeland Security and Emergency Management, do not have the prerequisite knowledge and structural engineering experience to determine and distribute these so-called seismic rehabilitation grants. The outcome of this Delgamy-driven legislation, and it's not that they were asked, they wrote themselves into the legislation in a work group in 2001, is not comforting for public safety here in Oregon. Emergency preparedness and emergency management in Oregon is best addressed by a standalone state agency professionally staffed with career practitioners with a technical knowledge to do their job effectively and with the leadership abilities to develop the full commitment and resources of the bottom-up responders who will be doing the majority of the work anyway when the next disaster strikes Oregon. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Is there anybody else that is here? Representative Boone, would you like to come back and reply?
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for indulging this second request. For the record, Deborah Boone, House District 32. And just to set the record straight, the meeting to which Mr. Bell is referring, this was an invited testimony as a report that was, it was an informational hearing only. It was not, we were not taking public testimony. We took the report that Dogami gave us that they did on the seismic assessment. Just to clarify that. I always give people a chance to testify, as does my co-chair, Senator Verger, who's here too. Thank you.
And each bill has a public hearing somewhere in the process, and that's what why we had this today. So I will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 1 and open a public hearing on Senate Bill 578. And as we get going, would you like to tee it up for us, or how would you like to proceed?
I would love to. Chair Shields, members of the committee, Senate Bill 578 creates a crime of subjecting another person to involuntary servitude in the first and second degree, with first degree set as a Class B felony and second degree as a Class C felony. Creates a crime of trafficking in persons and sets the penalty as a Class B felony. Allows the victim to seek restitution from a convicted defendant for the gross income or value to the defendant of the victim's labor or services, or the value of the victim's labor or services computed using the Oregon minimum wage and overtime provisions of the Fair Labor Standards Act. Also includes the crimes of involuntary servitude and human trafficking within Oregon's racketeering statute. Allows commencement of a civil action 6 years rather than 2 years after conducted conduct constituting human trafficking occurred. Creates a civil cause of action for damages against the person involved in trafficking. It also creates a civil cause for action for damages against the person involved in trafficking. And finally, allows a victim to raise a defense of duress when the victim was forced to commit a crime. You should also have an A4 amendment, which will originally, Senate Bill 578 established a human trafficking task force, and the A4 amendment will delete that requirement for the task force. And with that, I'm done.
All right, thank you very much. And who do we have that would like to testify? Do we have a list yet? Perhaps we could Representative Deborah Boone. Senator Berger, would you like to come up to it? Yes.
I think it's the first time I've testified more in one committee than in my own. For the record, Deborah Boone, House District 32, and I will be very brief too. I support this bill, Senate Bill 578. Brought this forward in some form last session, and we're back again. This is a big priority for Senator Kate Brown as well. And a lot of people have put in a lot of work, it's been a huge coalition working on this together, and I appreciate all their work. I feel that this is very necessary for our state to get ahead of the game in this, and I'm gonna turn this over to Senator Verger, but just know that you have 110, maybe 112% of my support, as much as I can give it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, I'm Joanne Verger, State Senator from District 5. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, the United States is a source and destination for thousands of men and women that are trafficked into this country for the purposes of sexual and labor exploitation. That is the reason that you have this bill. The Department of State is required every year to submit a report to Congress on foreign governments' efforts to eliminate severe forms of trafficking in persons. The 7th Annual Trafficking in Persons Report was released on June the 12th to help raise global awareness and to encourage the taking of actions to counter all forms of trafficking in persons. Human trafficking is a multidimensional threat. It deprives people of their human rights and their freedom. It increases global health risk, and it fuels the growth of organized crime. Currently, there's a growing community of nations and states making significant efforts to eliminate this atrocious crime. By the end of 2006, 27 states had passed criminal anti-trafficking legislation. With the recent release of this report, it is clear now, more than ever, that Oregon needs to address this issue. As a corridor state between Canada and Mexico, we must join the 27 other states and pass legislation that specifically addresses human trafficking, a modern-day form of slavery. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, these people are brought into our country, and they are very vulnerable because they do not know anyone to ask for help. They are very isolated. Senate Bill 578 defines the crime and its punishment, and I ask the committee to help those people who have no idea of what they were really getting into when they were brought into this country, to help them as far as prosecution of those who are guilty of these crimes. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Senator, for bringing this forward. Any questions for these two wonderful
No questions, but I would just thank them for bringing it forward. Because slavery is slavery, slavery is slavery, no matter how you define it or try to put words around it. And I don't know if any of you saw the documentary that was on about human trafficking, and I think it was a documentary that was several hours long.
Yes.
That talked about the number of, particularly, it was more women than there were men,
right,
who were being held in some very horrible conditions. And so I really commend you for bringing this forward. Anytime we are actually keeping anyone against their will or bringing them into a situation where they have no control over themselves. So I strongly support what you're doing.
Thank you, Senator Winters. I really appreciate your comments. It is true that many of these are women, and they're brought into the country under the guise of a good relationship. Some of them think that they obviously have found someone that they can share their life with, and when they get here, they're put into prostitution. So it is a very, very sad commentary. And you have before you the fiscal impacts, which are not that great. And so I hope as a committee that you will look at exactly what it is going to cost, and the cost when you compare it to the human element is really minimum. So thank you again for hearing the testimony today.
And I'd just like to add, too, one thing that wasn't mentioned is a large population that's being trafficked in as children. This is a huge problem in Europe, especially Eastern Europe and in the Soviet states and Asia. And it's just all over the world. You can't put a boundary on it. So it's very important that we pass this legislation today. Thank you.
Thank you very much for bringing this bill forward. I was wondering if there's no one to testify, Mr. Taylor, if you wouldn't mind coming up. I just had a couple of questions about the mechanics of the bill. And then evidently the fiscal has not been finalized, but professional staff has some comments about what the likely fiscal impact would be, at least at this point.
Okay. Chair Shields, members of the committee, I just had a few final questions about the fiscal itself. And I should have those finalized probably by Monday so that we can go into work session. The bed impact for the Department of Corrections in 07-09 will be about $165,000. And 09-11, that the prison bed impact and post-prison supervision cost will be about $550,000. We anticipate that that will be fairly consistent at $530,000, but those costs will peak in 2011-13 biennium. And so as I get the last few of my questions answered, I still have to nail down some things with the Judicial Department and public defenders about what their costs will be for this, and then I'll be able to release the final fiscal. But that should at least give you some context for what we're talking about.
Would you repeat those figures again for 07, 09, and 09, 11?
Bed cost? $165,000. Okay. And then together the bed impact and the post-prison supervision costs in 09-11 would be around $550,000.
And so your thoughts are then that it'll peak, meaning that once in 09-11 people will start to be released once as more people are brought in?
Correct.
Okay. And Mr. Taylor, I was just hoping you could help make sure the committee members who are here understand. On page 2 of the bill, section 3 talks about a person commits the crime of subjecting another person to involuntary servitude in the second degree if the person knowingly and without lawful authority forces or attempts to force the other person to engage in services by abusing or threatening to abuse the law or legal process. And a big problem on the employment front in this country, of course, is that people get lured into this country and then get into employment practices that are very exploitive. And I was wondering if an employer is threatening, you know, brings somebody who's undocumented to work for them and then charges, you know, threatens to call INS to have them deported. Is that something that would apply here, or is that outside the scope?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, not only there, but if you look down in lines 9 and 10, threatening to report a person to a government agency for the purpose of arrest or deportation. Chair, members of the committee, I guess it would depend on the facts and circumstances. If you brought someone on, employed them, and you knew they were illegal, and then you said, I'm not going to pay you, and if you object, I'm going to call INS, then I would say that's within the act. But if you know that someone's illegal and you are a citizen, you do have a right to report them. I guess it's the intent of what you're intending to do. I mean, that very well would be a crime right now under coercion.
Under coercion, okay. Mm-hmm. And then what is there a presumed sentence on the Class C felony? How many years? Or?
Chair, members of the committee, a lot of this will be dependent upon how the Criminal Justice Commission ranks the crime and what they'll Craig Prinz is here. What they will do is they will look at a similar offense. I imagine they'll look at the coercion statute and go from there. I think when we talked about it earlier, I thought he said it would probably be a level 6 or a 7.
So it depends on where it would fall on the sentencing guidelines.
That's right. Mr. Chairman, for the record, Craig Prinz from the Criminal Justice Commission. I've worked with Senator Brown's office and Mr. Taylor. And these crimes look like they're similar to coercion. It's an interesting coercion. I think this would be easier to apply in these situations where, in exactly those situations where you're talking about where the, what if the employer or whoever's, you know, the servitude, the person being prosecuted is threatening something that on its face might be lawful, that they're going to turn them into authorities, but they're asking to do something illegal or, you know, using that authority. So when we look at it, there's some cases that we heard about in the testimony, like where it's basically like compelling prostitution. That's a level 8, where the middle sentences would be about 24 months. And then coercion is a 6 or a 7, depending upon if the coercion involves threatening physical violence. So I'm sure that we would rank it, or I would recommend to the Criminal Justice Commission to rank these right in those between a 7 or an 8. And so that's where we got the fiscal that we gave Mr. Walker on the prison bed impact.
And that's on second degree, and then the first degree would be similar to
that's the one that when I looked at it was most similar to compelling or... it's almost like a kidnapping in the second degree where you're restraining someone. It's a little different. Again, the elements are a little different, but probably that's where I would ask the commission to compare it to those. Obviously, those are very serious crimes. So if we think that most cases could be handled by the federal authorities or with something like compelling, but I think that what we found is if it's ranked that high, it only takes a few, as you have learned all session only takes a few people to have a pretty substantial prison bed impact.
So how would you do a kidnapping, too, if that's a measure 11 counts?
How would you do it, Mr. Chair?
Yeah, I mean, because you wouldn't. That's not on the sentencing.
Oh, it is ranked. So the ranking on the grid is a 9. So it is ranked. It's just that the mandatory minimum is for kidnapping 2 is 70 months, which is actually would be basically on the grid would be like a person with a very serious serious criminal background.
Thank you. That's very helpful. Just want to make sure we're making an informed decision before we move this forward.
Question, because we often do reciprocity with other states tonight, in the testimony, there's 27 other states that have enacted laws. So if we had all 50-51 to make reciprocity, or because kidnapping can be across all the lines, and in that case, does the federal step in and become a part of that whole prosecution rather than the state?
Chair members of the committee, maybe I can give you some background in how we got where we are with this bill. Similar bills were filed at the end of last session, and they came before Judiciary Committee, and I talked to Virginia Vanderbilt, who was in with Legislative Counsel's office before she retired, and we just had problems the way it was drafted. It was based on a federal model. I used to work for Congress. They're drafting at least something to be desired, at least I think it does. And so we put together a work group in the interim, and it involved the Department of Justice, it involved Daywalker Foundation, Catholic Charities, the Oregon Criminal Defense Lawyers Association. And what we did is we tried to put a bill together that didn't duplicate too much of state law, but filled in the holes. And I think Section 4 is a good example of that, where we had the crime of trafficking in a person, knowingly trafficking in a person. And 578 was amended to reflect the work of the work group.
Great. And so the most current amendment is the -4.
Correct.
Okay. And I've been instructed there's still a little more work that needs to be done on this as far as the fiscal, et cetera. So we appreciate you both coming up. And it's my understanding that a work group has worked on this for months to get a wide variety of people on board. The Oregon
correct.
Criminal Defense Lawyers Association is neutral on the bill.
That's correct. And Christian called me this morning.
Good. And Representative Cameron.
Mr. Chair, a little more work done on the fiscal, and then we're going to bring it back. And
yeah, that's my understanding. That we are
a work
gonna move,
session on
we
it?
Are going to move this forward.
Okay,
that's
good.
My understanding.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Please. And is there anybody else here who would like to testify on Senate Bill 578? Welcome back. Mr. Bella, if you could please identify yourself for the record.
James Bela, 3412 Southeast 160th Avenue, Portland, Oregon. I just wanted to alert the committee to I came across a letter of advice from the Attorney General. It was dated 4/15/1977. And the question was asked about stopping and questioning about this. The question raised was whether you could stop and question illegal aliens by peace officers of the state of Oregon. And the letter of advice opinion was that you can't do that. And so I think it needs to be in the mix here of how you're actually going to get the justice that the law seeks. At one end, we have child abuse where, if it's even suspected, it just seems to me that it's worth considering if the policy is that you can't stop and question an illegal alien with your state police, that might be counterproductive to obtaining the justice that this bill is seeking. I just wanted to. It's April 15th, 1977.
Thank you for your testimony. I will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 578. And with no more business before this committee, this meeting is adjourned.